G'day guys, welcome to another episode. Before we get too far into it, could you please like, subscribe, share, comment, literally anything that you can do. It'll help out a lot. Thank you. All right, welcome back everyone. Today we've got Brad Cash, Managing Director of Drover Project Skate Park Builder.
G'day, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you for coming. As we start every single podcast episode, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your company, what you do, how you do it, and we'll run on from there, I suppose.
And we'll go from there. My company, Drover Projects, I've been operating as Drover Projects for about 11 years now. Building skate parks all over the place, wherever they need building, sort of thing.
Almost Australia-wide, you told me.
Yeah, predominantly the East Coast. I've had some opportunities to go west, but like I said, just sort of hasn't landed going over that way yet. But as soon as I got a gap in the calendar, I'll be over there with bells on. So it looks like they have a good time doing what they do over there. But for the most part, yeah, everything I do is around here and up the East Coast a bit.
How do you get into building skate parks?
Getting the skate park job initially was I got busted riding a skate park before it was done. Mm-hmm. So, I'm a BMX rider. So I grew up riding BMX and whatnot. So I, grew up out of Marysville on a farm. Family's all horse riders. Got a chippy apprenticeship after high school in my hometown. Everyone finished school and fucking left, so I'm stuck there by myself. Mm-hmm. Still riding BMX, met some other guys, met a girl, shipped up to Broadford, finished my apprenticeship, went out subbing, and that was like a disaster. I'd already bought a house by that stage.
Cool.
New subby, mortgage, car loan, all the stuff. Seriously not
killing
working.
It. Killing
just,
it.
Just slaying just it. Yeah,
killing
so,
it.
So, but then, so I got... the town nearby Kilmore had a new skate park, and I'd was coming home from work, and seen it was rideable. So
don't tell me you had your BMX in the back.
Always
have a BMX in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So it's a spare tire, maybe a bottle of water and a jack, and then a BMX next to it.
100%.
Okay, yep. So you're a serious BMX rider.
Yeah,
then.
Very much. Yeah, back then. Very much so. Still, like I've been re-inspired since having kids to really kick off with it again. Life happens and all that sort of stuff. But no, so I jumped the fence, was riding it before it was done, and then my old boss, Michael Haley from Precision Skate Parks, turned up to do the handrails and busted me riding it. So just pulled up like, yep, sorry, I wasn't trying to hurt nothing, just having a roll, and then just started asking him questions, how to do this, how to do that. He took my number off the side of my tool trailer and gave me a call and offered me a gig. And, that was 17 or 18 years ago now.
No shit. Now, I got a bit of a, like, we'll segue off of that part later, I reckon. But I got a thing about, numbers and names on machines, like guys who, plaster their name on it and then their number, like you're going to be driving behind it and going 0436.
We used to do that in traffic as a shit stir. If there was a car in front of us with a number and they were driving too slow, we'd give them a hoy.
Yeah, but okay, like I've never done it. I don't know how many people have done it. Like to just think, oh my god, I need a plumber.
Yeah,
and there's a plumber.
If you park right next to you, wind the window down.
Yeah, but I know the business name works too because that's Google. People see the name, then they Google and then they decide to call from what they Google.
Yeah,
but
so the number and the shopping list of what your services are is a little bit less relevant, especially now with your access to the gram and Google and
I
stuff.
I can remember
like that.
A guy I used to work with. Just we'll come back to. Where you're from,
but
guy I used to work with, he said, my name is, I do site cuts and board piers, and if you need to have contaminate, this is on the side of his truck, the side of the bin, if you need to have contamination cleaned up, I am able to do that with my partners. And I remember reading and thinking, like it was a novel on the side.
A fucking traffic hazard.
He takes down your number, which is amazing, you're a unicorn, by the way, but the only guy who's gotten a phone call from the number on the
I was about to say, because it was the classic... decks, pergolas, extensions, renovations, like all the classic chippy stuff,
and then
the phone number. And I look more professional than I was. I was surprised that I was coming home from work that day. That period was a fucking struggle. That was a whole thing. But yeah, but anyway, this whole thing, got lucky with the gig, and couldn't have come at a better time. It fucking
So when was that?
I was 21. I was 21. I'm 38 now.
Okay.
So yeah,
perfect.
Like I say, I bought my house when I was 20, while I was still an apprentice. I got lucky. I met like a finance guy, wanted to buy a house. He said you should do it while you're still an apprentice. He was like a wizard. He like pulled some shit and got me this loan. He said once you go out stubby, you're fucked. Like you've got to get your financials, blah blah blah. So he said if we'll pull this off and we'll get you a house now. Still like good decision, but bad at the same time. Like I was when I went out stubby and I was making fucking like I had no way of networking or no connections really. Like you know, a few mates here and there, but nothing that I could really capitalize on.
Mm-hmm.
I think at its worst, I had like so when I met Mick, I had like a $15,000 tax bill that I had no way to pay. I was 15 grand behind on my mortgage. They were about to repossess it. Like I was pulling money out of my bank account to go ride BMX, like for fuel to go to Canberra or something like that. So the bank didn't pull it out. Like as soon, like I'd make $500 this week and they'd pull out 400 of it.
Yeah, when they start to garnish the accounts, you know you're in a bit of a world of hurt.
Oh, man, it was bad. Yeah, it was bad. So, and I just met a girl who's like I broke up with the first missus and I just met a girl from America and I just sort of pledged that I'm going to save up and come and visit you in America. And I'm like, how the fuck? I can't even, I'm about to lose my house. I'm about to come homeless.
So on one hand, on one hand, you got a financial guru genius that just helped you get that. And then you're 15 grand behind in multiple areas, well, not just one.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
But I need five grand to fly to America to come and see a girl I'm now in love with.
Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, very
much,
good.
Pretty much. Very so good. It was, like I say, he was a great guy, still a friend to this day, retired now. But he set me up. But once, when, like, is it, well, one thing's getting a loan and the other one's making having enough to money pay to it. Pay the shit. Yeah. So, I had no way of getting work. I was trying to meet builders, but no one needed anyone. I was literally getting up, getting ready for work, driving and then just driving around to job sites and just offering myself, whether it was like,
please, someone give me $50 an hour.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll give me whatever you can spare, basically. Yeah.
You know, when I started, like I thought I was going to kill it because I knew how to drive diggers from growing up and whatever. So, and I just had no work, eh? I managed to get a little bit of small work, you know, 3-ton work and whatever. And I'm like, I'm going to buy a 15-tonner. So I bought a 15-tonner when I was like 22 or 3, let's say.
Yeah.
Not a fucking day's work for it for 4 months. It was a statue. I bought it in August, got it delivered in September. My first job for it was Australia Day, which is January 26th, the next year.
The next year. There you go.
So 4 months, not a day. And the only reason I got that job was because I answered my phone on a public holiday.
Yep.
And the guy's like, hey, do you want to? And I'm like, yes. Yeah. What do you need?
I'll be
I'm
there
coming.
Now. Yeah, absolutely. You know? What else do you need?
I've got everything. Are you going to pay me too?
Also.
Which is part of the. You know, this is the struggle or the things that no one
getting
sees
going.
Off of Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, like Instagram is shining fucking, diggers or, you know, great builds of these skate parks I've been looking at, which I just don't understand how you build them a bit. But, you know, we'll get onto
that's
that
a
part.
Thing, yeah.
But then, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, it's podcasts and, you know, drone footage when really it's 15 grand behind on your bills and not having a job for 4 months,
all strung out, not getting paid. Yeah.
Oh, and your mates are like, oh, yeah, how's you going with that digger? And you go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, good when it's good. But, yeah, when you're staring at it in the paddock for 4 months, it starts to hurt, especially in the early days.
Yeah, and your dad's making fun of you,
know. Yeah, that's right.
Told you not to buy that digger, boy. Told you not to. Stupid investment. You make more money in 5 tons, is what he used to say.
Yeah.
You probably do, but looking back 20 years later, but hard to scale with 5 tons.
My old man says the same. Like, I got a 3.5-tonner, and for what I do, that's a really good size.
Yeah.
Man, a 14-ton would be nice, hey? Ooh, even an 11-ton would
be good. I can actually see you in a 14-ton. I think
you're selling one, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, actually. if you need a 14-ton, hit me up. Got one of them, 20, 25.
Good to know.
So you're there, you've met this guy, he gives you a gig as a, I'm assuming, a handy guy who knows how to build jumps.
Yeah, well, just from chatting to him, I say my apprenticeship was one of like an old school all round do everything apprenticeship. So I sort of had my head wrapped around a lot of stuff, except ironically concrete. Had not touched concrete. My Cert 3 carpenter says that formwork, and I've never touched formwork ever, sort of thing. Maybe pushed a couple of barrows was as close as I'd ever gotten to concrete. So I went from domestic chippy straight into skate park building, and it was like doing my apprenticeship all over again, which was just, that was the best. You know, it was life-changing. So that plus being a BMX rider, like there's like personal glamour. Like it was fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, even on the worst day, it's like still parks.
Yeah, it's still better than building a deck or a pergola.
I still like building decks and pergolas. Yeah. Not that it really ever happens anymore, but for me now when I do it, it's like a novelty.
And
it's
Drover projects, you know, skate parks, bowls and...
But yeah, goals. That's it. Yeah. Fix and fit out. Yeah.
But it's so true, but like everyone drive. Notice the chippies cars. They all say the same thing.
Yeah, they do. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
And so tell me about that then. Tell me about what it's like to be going back doing your apprenticeship, learning how to skate park build, and then you've moving on to your next part, which is your thing.
Yeah, it was awesome. So like after growing up, like we lived on a farm out in Narberthong, so horses, fencing. My folks used to do a lot of work with like building like local horse yards and so like grew up working basically. I had my first job when I was 8, sort of thing. So like always just had like the worker's mentality, but fuck, I never worked until I started working for Mick. That was, I think that first year, I think I was home one night a week for the first year. And in that first year, squared everything up and saved up to go to America. Like,
just, hell yeah. Just fucking did you marry the girl there?
Yep.
No way.
It's our 10-year anniversary today. And I'm here.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, honey.
And you're well.
Kiss goodbye and happy anniversary on the way out the door.
Yeah, but how nice. You know, like that's a story right there. That's a love story.
Yeah, it was awesome.
My parents, you know, I sometimes feel like I derail it, but fuck it. It's my podcast.
Nah, dig in. Your podcast. Yeah.
So my parents, my dad and my mum ended up getting, my mum's American.
Nice.
They're becoming pen friends, I think, in grade 4 at school. They got their names given to each other in the classroom and said, you're writing Robert Starbuck, and my dad got, you're writing Sandy Pinkston.
Oh,
and
right.
And they wrote each other for 10 years or something.
Yeah, right.
And then when my dad was 19, he flew over there.
Yeah.
They didn't have many flights into the middle of America because my old lady's from Missouri. She drove with her dad to pick up my dad from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
A 4,000-kilometre drive or 3,000-kilometre drive or something. And then they got married like 2 months later.
There you go.
So there you go. Like American
and
he girls.
And so your man's Aussie?
Yep.
And your mum's from Missouri?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yep.
There we go.
And got each other's names in a classroom. Like they, you know, like you're writing this person, you're writing this person. You're right, and they just... Fate.
That's awesome.
And so there you go. If you didn't go riding BMX that day, you wouldn't have got the job. You would have been in deep shit with your mortgage, and you wouldn't have been able to afford to fly over there to say g'day.
Whole thing. Yeah.
And then 10 years. Well, it's got to be longer than 10 years. You took 5 years to get married.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'm good at maths.
It was. Yeah, there was some pen paling and whatnot involved initially, and a few other missos here and there, and a few other boyfriends at her side of things. Yeah. So, yeah, that's sort of the way it goes. Nice. But yeah,
and so you squared it up. I'll try and keep on track a little bit. Yeah, so you squared it up, and then you ended up. At what point do you start your own thing? How long were you with Mick?
Yeah, so I was with Mick for maybe 6 years. There was a point in there where I quit for like 9 months and became a photographer, which was completely off topic. Sounds off topic, but it's actually like the cornerstone of like fucking what got me here sort of thing. Yeah, another big part of it. But then, so after 6 years, it was at the 6-year mark. or 5 year mark, something like that, that Hannah shifted over. And so she flies all the way from America. I'm home for a month, and then I pissed off to Coffs Harbour for 5 months to build a skate park and didn't see her for 5 months. So I see, you know, every other weekend sort of thing in the month for 5 months. So I'm like, oh, I can't do this. Like, she's just come over. So I quit.
Must have been a big skate park in Coffs Harbour.
It was big, yeah, yeah. It was awesome. It must have been huge. It was awesome, yeah. So I was fucking like second in command, you know, 2IC by that stage. So I was basically, the boss was starting at one end of the park, I was starting at the other, and we're just working our way in. Hell so yeah. we're sharing guys, we're bouncing off each other. It was like that first 2 or 3 years working for him, that like the apprenticeship phase was fucking grueling, man. But then it got to a point where something clicked, and we just went to like just being fucking gun of a team. Hey, it was just the best.
That I can hear you respect it, and you know that it's such an important part of the journey. Let's say of your journey, of your company's totally. Journey, which is, you know, there's a grind that has to happen, that it can't be romanticized or anything. It can't be, you know, spoken about too much, because you don't want to either. It's not like you sat down and you're like, I fucking hate not being home, because it was just what has to happen.
Yeah, that's
you
know? Right. Yeah.
But I find that these days it's the part that really no one talks about, that my digger was parked there for 4 months. I'm making repayments and I don't have much work.
Yeah.
Times are tough, yeah?
Yeah.
But I'm also quite happy. Like,
yeah,
and I'm
sure,
I'm quite happy working away and doing my thing.
Seeing your mates and,
you know,
yeah, living life a bit.
And it's almost like that grind, if anyone's in it, you know, and if anyone's hearing about it or whatever it might be, that I get a lot of people say, oh, Jimmy, like, That was a really great story, because that's what's happening to me right now. Yeah. Right now I'm in that.
I'm doing that. Like, yeah, that's right.
You know, I don't have much money. Like, I got a bit of work on. No, work isn't too bad. I can see that I'm getting somewhere, but fuck, I still got no money.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the only way out is through, hey. Just got to keep on grinding it out. Like, say, if you're not making money, you're fucking racking up experience, or you're building connections.
If you don't earn, you learn.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
You just hope you're learning the right shit and not the wrong stuff. But hey,
exactly.
So derailed again. But
that's all right.
But you're 6 years. You've gone photography. Oh, what sort of photography?
Studio, like the lights and stuff in here.
Not action sport photography.
No. But again, it was another segue from BMX. So like a bunch of like BMX riding mates, and we're all successful in our own fields, but they're all different fields sort of thing. One mate, he was quite good at BMX, and he got sponsored, and we always taken photos, you know, of each and filming and of each other riding and stuff like that, a bit of magazine stuff. And then my mate, that became like his avenue. He got into media and photography and stuff like that. So he got a job at a studio, and they were just advertising for new photographers, basically. And I was taking photos as well, and just went, fuck it. Wanted to sort of see how the other half live a little bit. I was just a grunt, like I was fucking good concreter by that stage, but just getting a bit off it, just want to see what it was like on the other side of things, what an inside job might be like. And literally went in there for the interview. There was 15 photographers in there going for the interview. And the dude, it was like a happy, good time photography stuff, but still in the studio. So he's like, I want you to take a photo. I want to have heaps of like connection and personality and blah, blah. It was really emotive sort of environment, what they were trying to create with their photography.
I resonate with that. That's right up my alley, emotive photography.
I can tell.
Yeah.
So the dude... sets up this photo and says, all right, I do this, and goes click and takes a photo and says, all right, I want you to do that. Who wants to go first? I said, all right, I'll go first. So I go up there and I go, all right, I want everyone to do this, and go click and take a photo. And I go, all right, there you go. He's like, do you want to take any more? I said, well, you took one photo. I'll take one photo. That was what you asked me to do. Not realizing what he was asking was not necessarily do it with one photo, but create this thing. So we spend the next hour and a half with everyone taking fucking 50 photos, 200 photos, and they're going through them all and just artsy piss farting around.
No, I want the efficient dude that was first.
Yeah, that's right. So I got the job on like A, listens to instructions, right? And B, the dude who was doing the interview was mates with my mate.
Yeah, but photo was fucking rubbish.
It was a good photo.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was rubbish.
Yeah. It was a terrible photo. It probably was a terrible photo, yeah.
That's the idea funny,
was we had to take this photo and then we had to sell it to you as well.
Oh, you would have been good at that.
So we had to like create a connection with the image because I'm trying to sell it to you for $4,000. And give you an emotive reason to want to buy it, sort of thing. Yep. So this is where it started to become a little bit more relevant.
Yeah, well, I reckon you would have done well at that part.
Not too bad. It was funny. I got the job for, obviously all of those things. I sort of got like a tradie brain. Like, you want to do that, I'll do that. Plus they wanted to see if they could literally train a monkey to take photos.
Good.
So that was fine. And then it worked out good for them because obviously they got big industry guys coming in with their fucking families to take photos and blah, blah, blah. Mrs. has gotten a voucher for this photo studio. So they're all getting dragged in there. And then the photographer is like a tradie. So it became like a little niche for me in the studio as well. I'd get all like the tradie families. Which ended up being not too bad for them.
Yeah, of course.
But it's
funny how the world can work in a different sort of way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, probably not the best fit for the job at some points, but in other points, the best fit for the job, like head and shoulders above.
That's right, yeah. So certainly seemed to come with my advantages in there. But coming out of there, like just learning how to talk to different groups of people, and because I'm there with them in the studio for an hour and a half, it's my job to make it as memorable of an experience as I can. Anything I can do to connect you to these photos that we want you to buy, basically.
$4,000.
Oh, plus.
Plus. We don't want you to buy the $4,000 ones. Well, that's the beginning.
Yeah, that's their starting at. Yeah. Starting at sort of thing. And it was like the full office environment. There were KPIs that we had to meet, try to meet, but it was just like a carrot that they're dangling in front of you sort of thing. It was very, very hard to achieve that sort of stuff. And then your bonus is like $700. It's like, fucking, when I was concreting, I'm making that in a day.
It's interesting, the KPI discussion, because I've implemented some, but I implement them rather than the carrot, just as the minimum, you know. Like, you must meet X to be, not be sat down and say, is everything okay? Do we need to talk about this or that or blah, blah, blah?
Because
you know, at the end of the day, you're meant to be here, but you were...
They
seem to work okay because it's not a stick, but it's also not a carrot. Like the KPIs where you're saying, impossible to meet, and then when you get there, you get, a free dinner or something at Crown Casino.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, exactly. I imagine for you, it'd just be just making sure you're on track in it as far as KPIs as a minimum. It just means you're not falling behind sort of thing. You're trending in the right direction.
That's the plan.
Yeah, that's the ideal.
It doesn't always work out in the wash that way, but it definitely is the plan to keep the floor where it needs to be and not sink below.
That's right, yeah. Well, what I had when I worked with Mick, like Mick was the managing director of his company and he was on the tools working with us and he worked his ass off. He worked harder than all of us, like in his old man sort of thing. And all he wanted you to do was keep up. So, like, that's my... sort of mantra going into it.
I like to think I did that for 15 years. A lot of the boys would call me a fat, lazy prick, but, I was always early. I worked all day. I was the guy who never took lunch. I was never hungry. Because I was just driven to do that part of the job.
Yeah.
I always tried to do the most loads. I always tried to load the most trucks. I was on site. A lot of my friends
leading
are the
charge, leading by example, sort of stuff.
But at some point, the challenge is the company gets to so big. Like the job that you're leading. If you're building 10 or 15 skate parks at once. And you're down there trailing off a ramp,
That's
the
right.
The other 14 skate parks might be suffering a little bit because you're
not
over the top. And that's probably where I got to. I was killing one job in a good way.
And then everyone else has turned to shit behind you.
Killing four jobs in a bad
way. That's right, yeah. Well, that's been a big part of my adjustment. I'm a concreter turned businessman sort of thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Big part of my model is based on my passion for the work. Like, I fucking like doing it. And so when I'm, and to be able to do it, I need to be able to run it.
Now, you've segued this yourself, and so then you're finished with Mick, and now you're starting.
And now I'm out of my own, At the start, it was really easy. Like the first, let's call it 6 years, right? It's only been the last sort of two and a half years that I've really fucking grabbed the reins, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Before that, I had a builder that I would build them for. A designer. He'd go for design construct tenders. He'd just call me and say, I've got one for you. It's out, you know, whether, you know, central west New South Wales or on the coast or wherever. Yep. And I just go there and build it. And so I didn't have to worry about any of the paperwork. I was a glorified subby. You know, I bring all the guys, pay for all my shit. And he would just have his margin on top of me, and he'd do the design and all the paperwork sort of thing. So it saved me a heap of paperwork. And so that was just sort of sitting pretty, but I wasn't
graving.
That was, but not really getting anywhere, doing anything. Other people were progressing, building cooler stuff, involving other designers. Like,
you're building one guys only.
Just building one guys only sort of thing. Mm. Exactly. Yeah. Cause I didn't know how to do tenders or documentation or anything like that sort of thing. So,
and there's nowhere to learn if you don't go to university. So if you're coming from one stream, you know, which is what I've found a lot, because I came from the same stream as you did. Well, you might be a concreter, I was a digger operator or a truck driver or whatever. But you go to university, it's almost like they teach you to do the paperwork side of things.
Yeah,
they definitely do at some point, but we don't have any way to learn that. And there might be now, you might be able to go to ChatGPT and ask it how to do a fucking tender and bang in 4 seconds.
It gives you
a recipe.
Yeah.
But when I started, there was none of that. It was like I had to look up, you know, what is public liability insurance and why do I need it?
Yeah, that's it.
You know?
How is it relevant?
Why is this relevant? And then
$20 million.
$20 million. And so there, but then you go, you know, like, now, what is finance?
Yeah.
What's a good sort of finance to have? Do you get? Is it a chattel mortgage? Is it a lease? RPO? You know, I can remember the first time I heard RPO. I thought I was like the guy was an absolute moron.
Yeah, right.
You know, like rent purchase option. I rent it. You take the rent off, but then I get that off the purchase, but not all of it. You know,
sort of like a lease.
Similar, but you know, I get to keep it or not keep it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that was part of one of the reasons we started doing this here, because that exact thing that you're talking about, you know, how do you do a tender? Who do you talk to? You know, what is a sustainability goal? You know, which I'm sure that you've had to look at now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
And then you also probably realize it's not that hard. You know, now that you're in it.
Especially now, you say once you get your head wrapped around it and learn it, it's a whole fucking process in itself, which is exciting to, like, once you learn it, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Once you're in it, start to really unpack it, you know, like put down the TikTok, put down Facebook, stop watching television and read 40 pages at night time on your kitchen desk.
Yeah,
or kitchen table. Mine's turned into a desk at certain points in my life.
Definitely.
But, you know, just have a really good read and try to understand it. And then once you do, you go, well, hang on a second, I can build skate parks. I can build the whole thing, and I know what I'm doing, ordering everything. I know how much I need. I know how long it's going to take.
Yeah.
That's most of this.
That's you right.
Know,
yeah, exactly.
Most
yeah,
of
yeah.
it is like me putting the price at the end, you know, 100 grand, 500 grand, that's whatever right. amount yeah, of money. Yeah.
And then filling it out right between start and finish.
And then filling it out correct. But you know all of that part. You've been doing it, you know, taking care of it. And then so you go, your designer, and then you end up obviously stepping out on your own and start.
Well, I'd established Drover Project by that stage, and come up through the whole, like, learning how to get money to buy machines and seeing the value in having that sort of stuff. Like, first job, like, I made basically nothing on because I was wet hiring machines and doing multiple runs, taking all materials down there and paying full price and blah, 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 like just credit cards out the wazoo, just beg, borrow and steal to survive the first job.
Yeah, but I've got a job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then I'm just like hanging, like just logging into NetBank like every second day for the next 30 days waiting to do the payment.
Haven't we all been there?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you know that, like that 2 o'clock in the morning where you check on your phone, you're like, I fucking got that. Wait, Hannah, I
fucking got that. Yeah. Yes.
I can remember I was waiting on a big infrastructure job to pay me, and there'd been a bit of fuckery.
Yeah.
We'll call it fuckery. Mm-hmm. We'd gone forwards and backwards a little bit, and they hadn't paid me for like 4 months or 5 months overdue.
Yeah.
For fuckery.
That's a minute.
Yeah. And I can remember I got paid. You don't know if you're over the moon, relieved, you know, more stressed, happy, you know, like there's just this tidal wave of emotion that says, you know, release. I've made it, but I'm still so fucked. You know, like,
that's right.
Where's the next one coming from?
That's right. Yeah. Now what? Yeah. Like, every time I got a job, I'd like shit myself. I'm like, fuck. How am I going to do this job again? Yeah, like, am I going to, you know, did I price it in, or did we win it because I went in too cheap?
Well, that's the thought every time, isn't it? Every single time always you go,
freak out a little bit.
Fuck, I should have put more on that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Why did I win it? Yeah. You're trying to find out what everybody else.
And did. Then when you don't win it, it's only because you put too much on. Oh my god, I should have put less on. Yeah, Why am I so greedy? That's
right. Why did I bump it? Yeah.
You know, when you're writing it down, you go, nah, that's going to take me 3 days, not two.
Honestly, up until recently, my philosophy was always like, if I finish with a bigger number than I started with, then it's a win.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, which is a terrible way to do your numbers. But it's only been recently that I started like trying to like track my shit properly. You know, I mean, using the software and using Excel, trying to wrap my head around fucking Excel and sitting there, with the knockoff beer or the morning coffee, just getting it all down on paper while it's
still fresh. How's it going? What do you think about that?
Man, the last two jobs, I started doing more of that, and game changer. Like taking a bit more time to pay attention to where it's all going. Like from that, I can see proportionately where it's all going and sort of thing. So it's the opportunity to be able to use that competitively or see where my big expenses are to know what bit of gear to buy next to save. So like I just bought a trailer pump, concrete trailer pump, 12 months ago now.
Oh, shotcrete one.
Shotcrete one. Yeah, little trailer pumps, normal stuff as well. But then went and bought the big compressor. And all the gear to do shotcrete sort of thing. Yeah. So, because that was always not just an expense, but a logistical factor.
Yeah. They can only book you in next Thursday.
Exactly.
You know, and you're ready on Monday. And so, what are the boys going to do for 3 days?
Yeah.
I'm assuming
it's a whole thing. Yeah. And they've got a minimum charge, and you want to make the most of them while they're there. So, you're aiming to do big pours if you haven't got enough crew to manage a big pour. Having your own pump, like, there's an expense and a small amount of logistics involved with that too. But you can just do it. So, like, I can spray 4 cube. I can go one ramp at a time if I need to. But at the same time, whole new dynamic having a pump. It's a profession in itself.
Yeah. And then I can see, like, because I've obviously had to scale from a 2-ton.
Yep.
You know, where I wouldn't even take care of my own jobs to let alone take care of every facet.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't even take care of my little component, let alone the entire job.
Yeah.
And you end up sometimes losing far more, and you look at it and you go, why did I buy a pump again? I could have just called that guy and he would have came down here and shot 80 metres or 50 metres or whatever their minimum is.
That's right.
You know, and it packed up and left, and instead now I'm here holding a bag of shit, and I'm assuming you've had a concrete pour go badly, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, like, where I always talked about carpentry – like if you call carpentry mass, concrete's like chemistry, and it's so subject to the environment and the situation and stuff like that. Like, it's so much to read into it, and if you miss out on one or two of those environmental factors on pour day, it can really go to shit on you.
Yeah,
sort of thing. You know, like cloudy, sunny, windy, early conk, late conk. That has more of an effect than people give credit to.
I've got a bit of a driveway that's absolutely hammered at home because we poured. We poured. It was meant to be at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
They ended up not coming till 12. It was 35 degrees. We were hoping to get it in, get it down.
Hot load.
We, you know, one of the boys had to leave at about 2. So, you know.
Yeah, for a kid pickup or something. Yeah. Something, whatever.
Oh,
yeah.
There's always some reason.
Yeah,
There is, you know, it doesn't even matter anymore. You have a choice. Mm-hmm. Are you going to let them go, or are you going to let them go and, you know, tell them it's not acceptable and fire them?
Yeah.
You know, there is no they're staying really hard. Half of the time, you know.
Yeah, that's like, right.
Especially if they tell you. But that's okay too, because I've had to go pick up my kids and stuff. And,
yeah, everyone's, you know, got shit.
Everyone's got shit. Yeah.
And the more people you've got on, the more shit you've got to do.
Correct.
There's that much more back end to factor in which with concrete can make
well,
or break
when
it.
Well, when you got 9 o'clock turns into 12 o'clock and a guy going home at 2 and then no finish on it, but the whole thing snapping like this.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a pretty bad day.
Yep.
So I leave that there as a reminder that of why I don't do concrete.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, it's there's a certain mentality that goes in it, and then make a transition, make it a bowl, something like that. Like you gotta have you really gotta manage those factors. Hey.
So how do you learn to do that? Is it just like shotcrete in a wall, but just making it round?
Yeah. So it's similar. Like you've seen spray pools, spray and cut pools. It's like that, but just finer finish. So we've got curved screeds for doing quarter pipes. As soon as it's like you can't machine finish a quarter pipe, it's all hand finish. So that's where it comes down. Like they're usually small pores because it's all getting hand finished. So
and hand finished to a really high quality as well.
Yeah, that's
now
it.
I think of it.
Yep. Smoother and flatter the better. So there's a whole series of floating and trailing processes to go through to get it as flat and smooth as it can possibly be.
I think you've almost got to burn it with your.
You
is
do.
That right?
Yeah,
with
hand burnish. Yep. So there's a bit of rock tape on the wrists after a few days in a row of doing it. So then if you've got a big ramp, so we just did the skate park in Emerald, and it's a 10-foot bowl. You know, it's 4.5 meters from the toe of the ramp to the coping, and you've got to get out there, and it's fucking wet. So you've got stick trowels, you've got like a curved ladder that you're climbing out there, so you're hanging.
Oh,
off
you've
the
got
side,
a curved ladder
off the side of a ladder, I can trowel and all that sort of stuff. So
no, that sounds rubbish. I'm going to put it out there for all of the listeners who are listening to this and going, gosh, you want to charge a heap for that because that sounds shit ass. Hanging off of the side of a 4 meter tall ladder on a bowl, hand burnishing concrete.
It's a lifestyle choice, that's for sure. Yeah. Well and truly.
In Emerald.
Which is all, and then in springtime. So it was raining 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And now it's cooking.
Yeah.
And it's going to be raining again in half an hour.
Yeah. And it's going to ruin your finish.
And it's
going
to ruin your finish if you're not paying attention, sort of thing. And the wind just picked up and. You get concreters in for like a job, and then they go, yeah, nah, I'm going to go back to driveways, hey.
I can understand why.
So what you're usually looking for is more people, more skaters and riders and stuff like that. So it's a lot of the guys that do it are skaters and riders, predominantly skaters, just because they've got that founding passion for the ramp to turn out like as good as it can be. And then you just got to teach them the skills.
We do a bit for the Australian Supercross for the motorbikes. We take the dirt into the stadium and take the dirt out of the stadium for them at Marvel. And
cool.
There's a guy, I should probably hit him up, Josh from ProTrax. Josh, yeah, I'm going to hit you up. We should go put him on the podcast, Luke. He's got a cool story. Yep. Similar sort of deal.
Yep.
Runs an excavation company, traveling Australia, building dirt bike jumps, tracks, Supercross, awesome. Motocross, whatever it is. And the passion that we drive diggers. I would like to think that I am a good operator of machinery.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that I can operate that because, like, whoops, being the same. I it got close enough. But Josh and his boys, you know, that they get in there.
There's a skill set there, hey.
Yeah. their passion, you know. They're mostly either ex-motorcyclists or current, and they come out there and they just put so much love and attention into building this stuff. I'm assuming that in this scenario, I'm the concreter and you're the skate park builder. You know, you want to build a great, you know, skate park that you know will work well for what you do. Mm-hmm. I've got no idea if it'll work well. I don't, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, and that's like the best skate parks are the ones built by skaters and riders. Yeah, we find this. There's other guys that build them that don't do that, but they're good concreters. See what I mean? So they just lean on the plans. You know, it's all spec'd out, radiuses, dimensions, blah, blah, blah. And they do it that way, but it's but the ones built by actual skaters.
Do you get involved in the design now?
More and more. So I've got an affiliation with a designer, East by Westco. He's been such a massive help for me the last couple of years. So he's amazing with documentation. Design's a great park. Ticks some boxes. A lot of emphasis on like the community consultations. So like we'll get a design construct. He goes out, they have like a community meeting, get all the kids in.
No, you also don't want to build an X Games style skate park for mostly young kids either.
Well, that's always where the contention comes with the skate park designs. I was saying that before. Like the pros, like the good riders, obviously want them to be massive, but you still always got to have facility for the kids to learn on.
Yeah. I've got a five-year-old who can't be hitting a 4.5 meter tall.
Yeah, ramp. Yeah, exactly. It's a slide to them, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like my son, he's 7. 12 months ago, he wasn't dropping in, and I think on Sunday he just dropped in on his first 5-foot quarter and flew out the other side at Lilladale Bowl. Once they get it figured out, the learning curve goes like that. But just having a skate park that accommodates to that range is that. And then have every skate park be unique at the same time is that's a real trick. So credit to the designers that go out there and have a go. And then copping all the shit for, your design's cookie cutter skate parks, this, blah, 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 that. Like it's fucking...
Yeah, how many different ways are there to do a quarter pipe?
Multiple ways. As far as layout, multiple. Yeah, multiple ways.
But
yeah.
How many ways are there really? At the end of the day, it also has to be a quarter pipe and the...
Exactly.
What do they call them in the middle? The box or whatever also has to have a rail on it.
Yeah, because you want something to grind, like a rail to grind, a ledge to grind, transition. Yep, something to go. So, yeah, there's lists is a mile long of things that you could do. And that's where the designs with the community consultation really comes into play, is go see what kids are there and assessing their potential and then building them a skate park that's going to suit them not only today but in the years to come up until they finally move away. Or if the park's good enough, they wouldn't even need to move away.
So a little bit of a pointy topic that I can see, and not looking to stereotype any BMX riders, skateboarders, bladers, scooter riders.
That's right.
However, if they're the best workers and stuff like that, they could also possibly on the flip side be the worst workers because they want to go riding and they want to, travel, or they might want to go see a fucking skate event whatever.
Yeah.
I know a mate of mine runs into big problems with surfing. He's a surfer. Yeah. As soon as the surf's up,
everyone's gone.
Boys fuck off.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that? Because running a business coming from that sort of thing, but there is only so much leeway you can give a bloke. And so at the end of the day, you have to sit there and go, I understand, but do your fucking job or I'm going to find someone else. How have you dealt with that over the years?
Yeah, look, you're either willing to stay or you're not. And if you're not willing to help me at a time when I need you, well, next time, I'm going to have to need you to want to bother with that again, sort of thing. So,
have you struggled with that?
Yeah, always. Yeah, I've turned over a lot of people over time. Not so much with like the skating, like pissing off to go skating, sort of stuff. A lot of it comes down to like the lifestyle. So, like to find someone that's good at concreting, skateboarder or a rider, willing to travel to whatever corner of the bloody state or country to build parks. There's a lot of stars that have to align to find those really good people, sort of thing.
Yeah,
yeah. And then to be able to handle the work, sort of thing. There's a certain level of like sort of masochism or sort of sickness you got to have for the work, just the passion that comes with it, to want to be able to sort of put up with it.
Yeah, it's a bit like mining. There's a whole crew of like really really top level like production operators.
Yeah.
It's a sickness. You have to be sick to want to sit there.
You've got to be into it. Yeah.
12 hours on a night shift for fucking, a month, throwing the same dirt at the same truck and really striving to do a great job.
Yeah.
Because you can just cruise and do a medium job.
Yeah.
But that's not what it's about. They really have to go hard. I know a few really killer guys.
Yeah, right.
And it's the guys who I'm assuming is the same thing, but as you've got, you could get a concreter come, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
You got a guy who's passionate about, building that to the best that it can be built.
Yeah.
The finish is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be really difficult because if they do have that lifestyle choice, then that would mean, your 5 months in Coffs Harbour, you said.
Yeah, wouldn't do that now. Wouldn't do that now.
Gosh, that must have been a big park.
Yeah, it was on the bigger side. Yeah, there's since been bigger parks, for sure. There's there's some huge parks all over. There's a massive one in Sydney now. I think they just put out that they're going to build like a big Olympic caliber park out near fucking that joint just south of Sydney.
I don't know.
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the town.
I think Newcastle's north.
Yeah, Newcastle's north. And Wollongong. Oh, near Wollongong. There we go. Yeah, the gong. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the gong.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the next one on my list after Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, speaking about big parks then.
Yeah.
Well, what's the best parks in Australia? You've obviously built a few of them.
There's some great parks all over the place. And for the builders that are in the country, like, yeah, sort of everyone's had a turn. I couldn't tell you the best park. Like, different parks tick different boxes for different people.
Okay.
Yeah, sort of thing. So, like, we just built Emerald Park out in Emerald Bowl, which people are loving that. It's a massive park, one of the biggest ones on that side of the city. Mm-hmm. So that's a thriving one. But then there's people that love, you know, Riverslide in the middle of Melbourne sort of thing. Depending on whether you're like a street skater, a bowl skater, or a rider, street rider, or jumps rider, everyone has different tastes that suit them as far as skate park designs go, which is what makes designing them so challenging to appease as many people as you can. So
if you've moved from the journey starts and says that you work for yourself, you work for someone else, you step out of it a little bit, then you get back into it. Yep. Now you work for yourself. But underneath someone else, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
And then you've started to take on a little bit more of your own. In the last sort of 5 to 10 minutes, I reckon we're up to.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for Drover? Where are you going? What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I said, after doing those parks, let's say I'd had a couple of kids by that stage. So I kind of bowed out for about 18 months, which that was a good process. Well, being closer to home for the kids, doing some local work and things like that. But obviously lost a bit of luster for life, sort of thing. You know, missed the work, sort of thing. Then another skate park sort of landed in my lap, and that sort of reinvigorated me. So I said to Hannah, we got to get back into these. They're too much fun, and you know, sort of doing my head in, not being, I don't know, the best, sort of setting an example for your kids kind of thing. You know what I mean? You've got to follow your passion sort of thing. So I got right back into it. I did like a bunch of tender writing training, like learning how to tender properly. Started like updating my gear, getting more gear and just going after these tenders.
What did you learn in tender writing? What do you think about it?
I enjoyed it. So I did some tenders before that. Had a lot of help from other guys that had their head wrapped around paperwork a bit better. But I wanted to be able to learn that myself, even if I'm outsourcing it to other guys to help me out. I still want to know what I'm looking at to make sure it's going in the right direction. So now I got a lot of value out of the tender training, someplace up in Sydney. Yeah, but enjoyed that. Sort of found the tender writing process. It's its own little creative process.
It is.
Sort of thing, yeah. So I enjoy that aspect. Same as the social media stuff, man. That's its own animal, isn't it?
Hell yeah.
Fucking does your head in sometimes, hey? So from since there, just, winning parks, getting trying to compile this crew of good guys. I'm on some gun builders now. The hard part, one of the challenges at the moment that I'm trying to address is I'm trying to make it like a lifestyle job as well. Like, I don't want to be away for 5 months building a skate park. I want to be home with kids, making it work with this new stage of life sort of thing. And a lot of dudes are at the same stage. So trying to rotate these guys through, and they all still love the work, but they just can't anymore because they've got kids or they've got reasons to be home. So trying to create a dynamic where these guys can come in, do a great job, enjoy their work, still get home to see their kids or keep the finger on the pulse with home life.
Hard.
It's a tricky one. Hard. And I'm like doing that in real time. We just got back from 2 months over in Maroombula. So that was a good little sort of little bit of a test. The last
how far was Maroombula from you?
10-hour drive.
I was going to say 8, but yeah, okay.
Eight 10. In the car. Eight in the car. Better part of 12 in the truck. Yeah, only just got there in time on the NHVR limiter sort of thing in the logbook.
Yeah.
Yeah, only just got there in time. But once you're there, they've got flights in and out. So just the logistics of that. But it's more just managing the lifestyle of that, checking in with the kids all the time, keeping things moving at work.
It's real hard. That work-life balance, it doesn't seem like there's a way to adequately balance it.
Yeah.
You know, because even you're saying, you know, like follow your passion, set a good example, drive a business, you know, do all of this.
Yeah.
Put your skills into something, you know, that's probably is against the work-life balance. You need to work, Dad. Oh, you know,
like, yeah, exactly. You got to work. Yeah. So I think with that, more just comes with, for me, it's like you got to be okay with taking a bit of a hit if it means that your quality of life is better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, home's taking a bit of a hit because I'm working away, but then the good thing at home is that they've got a dad that is, you know, building his passion, all providing for communities,
they got a parent who
someone
is...
Someone fucking decent to look up to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. So I like creating that for my son and daughter, as well as trying to facilitate these jobs to bring these guys that still love building them to be able to rotate them through. That's where the name Drover Projects come from. Like, you know, like the old drovers, like going from station to station sort of thing.
I was going to ask that, but I forgot.
Everyone wonders, hey?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
The drovers who were going around and, you know, working 1 or 2 months at each cattle station doing a thing and then pissing off to the next one.
Pissing off to the next one. So if I wasn't running my own business, or when I'm not running my own business, I'm jumping on other crews myself.
Yeah, the Australian version of a cowboy, just in case we have some international listeners, a drover, someone who
worked
contract jobs around the whole country.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yep,
I really like that, eh? That is good.
Yeah, I enjoy that, yeah. And then, like, wanted to sort of stay away. Like, something unique, right? Something unique. There's nothing skatey or BMX-y about the name Drover Projects. It's not a letter. It's not, you know, three letters for the company name or the surname for the company name sort of thing. So I wanted to be something a little bit on the unique side, not having to dig or nothing.
No. Listen, if there's a joke you can tell me about Starbuck that I haven't heard, you'll be doing really well.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I had have given it a three-letter name or like, Enviro something or, you know, or whatever. Dirt brokerage.
Green tech. I was going to start up an Instagram page called Procon Build Creek.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How many pros are there out there and cons and everything else? And not making fun of the cons either, but it seems like it ends up being, you know, when you start out by yourself, I was like, fuck, what am I going to call it? The first one was Starbuck and Son. And then as I got bigger, I'm like, I've got to drop off the son because I ain't got a son. I was pretending that my dad was helping. And so then I'm like, oh, just Starbuck Excavation.
Yeah, yep.
And then you get a little bit bigger and you go, shit, what else am I? Oh, Starbuck Plant Hire. And then all of a sudden you're way too big to change it now.
That's it.
And there's no going back because there's some IP that you've built behind Drover people see the tender, they go, they can build a park.
Yep.
Now, what's their pricing? What's it like? Blah, blah, blah.
That's right, yeah.
Not who are they and can they build it?
Yeah, that's right, you exactly. Know? So, building up that reputation and nurturing those relationships around the country goes a long way. And the social media just reinforces that.
100%. You know what I mean? So there's a couple of minutes left. I got my five-minute warning because we try and keep them about an hour. But I always put everyone on the spot at the very end and say, was there anything you wanted to say on the podcast? You know, was there anything that you wanted to talk about that, you know, we haven't touched on?
It's a real on-the-spot question, isn't it?
But you would have heard it on the last one you know?
Definitely do, and I still don't know how to answer it, man. No, it was just awesome to come on here and have a chat and talk skate parks and compare, you know, what I do and how I do it with yourself and your experience and stuff like that. Like, the people you've had on here has just been such a range, and stoked to be involved and invited in to have a chat.
Well, if you think that there's any good guests or whatever, we've got some good ones coming up. We've had some amazing ones already on.
Yep.
But let me know, and I reckon that'll be about the finish of it. But I appreciate you coming. Thank you very much. I've also been working on my handshake because my mate Mark made fun of me.
Oh,
I know he'll be listening to me too.
Nailed that.
Thanks. Yeah. Like, subscribe, comment on things, share it to your mates. If you think of anyone interesting, let us know. Brad, thank you very much from Drover Projects.
My pleasure, man. Thanks
appreciate it. Done. All right.